Now boarding for Rebuild of Joycast, your weekly destination for anime, manga, and more.
Welcome back, everyone, to Joycast. This week, Val is on break, so I'm joined by the lovely Stina Carey.
Hello, that's me.
So last week, I brought up the fact, very lightly I brought up the fact that we're sensing a bit of a shoujo takeover, the title of last week's episode, but then we barely addressed it, so this week I decided to bring in the expert on that. But just to kind of summarize, it's the fact that we're seeing series like Two on Ice go out the door, and I feel like that's a very short-sighted move by Shonen, Shonen Jump specifically, because based on the success of stuff like Blue Box and Witch Watch and Don Don Don, it's like we're seeing a merger. We're seeing that to keep the medium, the Shonen formula fresh, we're pulling in from other. Do we refer to Shonen and Shoujo and Seinen as genres? Or
they're demographics.
Obviously they're demographics, but yeah, like.
But to be fair, like as far as art goes, this is apparently controversial, especially in shoujo circles. But I really do believe that even if it doesn't speak to a genre, I think that they're kind of becoming like there's stylized techniques that you can assign to each one
because they obviously are demographics. It's right there in the name.
Yeah.
Shonen is young man. Seinen is what, young adults or.
Seinen is, like, man.
Man. Seinen just means man.
Jose is
comma,
woman.
Man. Man, period.
Man, period.
But yeah, so then you got Shoujo, which is geared towards girls. But at the level at which manga operates, those have essentially become genres. There's a style that is attached to them beyond demographic.
I'm not going to argue the whole time about this, but I do have to
it's
say...
It's not a hard genre.
A large reason that I have a problem with that referring to them as genres is because people then conflate them with things they are not. Like, people assume that all shonen are battle manga and all shoujo are romance. And
see, this is why I call them a genre, because I'm of the mind that, you know, like, comedy, romance, action, those are all separate things, and then shonen would be a separate thing. Because, so what is shonen synonymous with, what is shoujo synonymous with? I go purely on visuals. When you have a shonen, you see that the characters are sharper, darker, harder inked lines, where with shoujo,
yes, that's the art style.
You see the fluttery, the glitter, the text is almost a thought dream bubble.
I love that. Love that. That's like one of my favorite things about it. Is just the way that they like visually represent interiority.
It's a very blurry line, because you are right, because the way I describe that, it almost with shonen specifically, it almost immediately jumps into battle. I see what you mean.
Yeah. So it's like, I like to make the distinction because also when you're looking at demographics, we know that there's shonen romances.
Yeah.
And they differ pretty significantly from shoujo
romances.
But
you've read more Blue Box than I have.
Love Blue Box.
Does that not echo shoujo?
A little bit. I think that, there are definitely, for one thing, there's definitely shoujo romances that have male protagonists where it's like told from his point of view. Granted, none of them come to mind immediately, but it happens. But with Blue Box, I feel like the thing that connects it to shoujo is not so much it being a romance, but more so like the art style, like we were talking about. Like, I just feel like the eyes are sparklier.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, we see a lot of the inner world.
But it's also like, again, because shoujo has these, the way that shonen is formulaic, shoujo has some formula, especially the modern shoujo, where you get a lot of these premises that are, as I like to affectionately, but also derogatorily call, I derogatorily call it in shonen, where I call it affection in shoujo, it's domestic propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's a situation where the protagonist is forced into a domestic situation.
Yeah.
And the minute, again, I feel like I have to correct myself, because I feel like it feels a little bit, I don't even know how to word this appropriately. The fact that I would refer to the shonen formula as the derogatory version and shoujo as the affectionate, that almost feels like forcing gender stereotypes. Like, oh, it's a good thing when the girl's forced into it, but it's a bad thing when the boy is forced into it. Like, why do I feel that way? We don't have all day to describe that, but it's more than just that.
I have a theory on that, though. And part of that will lead into our discussion about what you read for this.
Well, here's my theory. The way that it's not misogynistic to think that way. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's a power fantasy. These are always power fantasies. And when the woman goes into it, it's always a position of power. Mm-hmm. In a shoujo, it's matriarchal. In shonen, it's patriarchal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it.
And it's usually not earned on the male end. And in shonen, it's like, wow, you're just ripped right in. Whereas,
congratulations, you have a wife now.
Congratulations. The wife just shows up at the door. He did not earn it. But we'll have a flashback one day when he gives her a Band-Aid. And that's how he earned it. It's like, wow, you did one gently kind thing that you could do to your fellow man,
that's
too.
That's how boys think of women's attention, though. Yeah. They're like, she talked to me. She must want to fuck. So it's like, it makes sense that it appears that way in shonen. But yeah, I do think that in shoujo, it becomes a lot more like a rite of passage, which again, like,
yeah, well,
how do we think of becoming a woman?
At the end of the day, what I'm saying is that I think that's foundational issue. I've talked this out with you and now I get it. I figure it in my head. It's not always, I want to make sure that not all shonen, not all young men, with shonen, these scenarios, these premises always feel very unearned.
Mm-hmm.
In a shoujo, it feels more earned. There's more buildup to it. At the end of the day?
Well, the girl has definitely, like, played an active part in building a relationship. And the beautiful thing about shoujo is the boy has worked to earn it, too.
Yeah, that too. Yes, in the shoujo.
And I think that, like, I don't understand when people talk about, like, oh, romance is shallow and vapid. I'm like, I think a lot of romance shonen kind of are. I agree, and I get why people don't like it based on that alone. But with shoujo, it's like you have two equal partners approaching a relationship that they are enthusiastic about in most cases, and I will always give it props for that.
Yeah, but that being said, though, it's only on the premise level because, again, stuff like Blue Box and Witch Watch, like, they work on it.
Blue Box.
They work on it.
Blue Box, well, Blue Box, I think that if we talk about, like, taking cues from shoujo, Blue Box has a relationship of equals. At least it did for, like, most of the beginning series. Right now, we're getting less focus on the gal, but...
So, that being said, it's ending now. Did you read the
Blue
ending
Box
of...
Blue Box is ending?
No, not Blue Box. You got to let me premise here.
Oh.
Two on Ice is ending.
Yeah.
Because... The finale comes out tomorrow. Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, so do you... do you feel like the premise, the structure has been earned in Two on Ice?
The structure. Elaborate?
Elaborate. I believe it is, but do you believe it's earned where Two on Ice definitely has a male protagonist, because it's Shonen Jump at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
He's inspired by the female cohort. Mm-hmm. And he literally, like, pursues her, earns her respect to work together and be an ice skating pair.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it does it right. Do you feel the same way about that?
Oh, totally. Especially because, and this is kind of unfortunate, because it felt like they were building towards something, like, bigger.
Yeah.
Like, another arc that was going to be fucking sick.
It's a very short-sighted move on Jump's part. They should hold on to it. They really should hold on to it.
I'm hoping that eventually it makes a comeback as, like, a web feature, but...
I mean, Candy Flurry came... I don't think if Candy Flurry came back yet, but I know Candy Flurry's coming back.
I think that shit can come back forever on Plus.
Yes, I agree, too. Oh, I agree too.
Because it's so, and yes, to your point, when you're talking about, you know, does it feel like it's well constructed? Does it feel like it deserved more? Does it feel like the relationship is earned? First of all, what's really beautiful about Two on Ice is it's really not framed as a romantic relationship. It's framed as like a friendship between two people that are super equal. And it's fascinating because it's like, there are aspects where you want it to be a romance, but it's like, no. These are two extremely talented people that have immense respect for each other and just want to be friends. But like
visually he yokes Shoujo so hard.
Visually it's Shoujo, and the fucking antagonist is absolutely Shoujo pilled.
Yeah.
Because Shoujo allows men in their storylines to be vulnerable. It's not the same as making men weaker. It makes them vulnerable. You can explore
they crack them open harder.
Yes, you can explore their human issues, you can explore their flaws, you can explore their dark pasts, and they're not always, I murdered someone.
Yeah.
I murdered someone I love, or my whole village was slaughtered. It's like real human issues that you or I would deal
with. And it's so funny that you're mentioning this now, because I do have to mention this earlier. We are going to have a My Hero, so guys, I hope you didn't turn off after 10 minutes. There will be a My Hero segment this episode.
Oh, fuck.
But what I've mentioned is right now, I'm currently in the middle of producing a Kaiju number 8 Abridged. And a lot of it, again, I always like to do commentary in our parodies. I like to speak about the medium, the anime and the manga medium, because at the end of the day, commentary is what protects us most from copyright claims, is that when we claim to be a reviewer. So I had to do a lot of research. And I don't want to spoil it just yet what's going on in our Kaiju number 8. It's gonna be pretty obvious, but when you see it, because it's not hiding it. But I just want to keep surprises for the final product. But doing research, I research a lot of modern manga, Shonen Jump specifically, as well as some other ancillary magazines that you would confuse as a Jump. For example, Attack on Titan. You would think that was Shonen Jump, but it's not. But it is a Shonen. And trying to find these common themes. And who is the subversion, who I hate that word, but who evolves that formula? And at the end of the day, thanks to like the last quarter of the series, I'm finding and making jokes about it in Kaiju number 8, My Hero Academia, hilariously, as I have historically referred to as buttery popcorn entertainment and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
My Hero, at the end of the day, now that Horikoshi's got his right editors and he's allowed to actually have themes right at the last second, My Hero Academia is very exceptional.
Three chapters behind.
The way that you describe that we can crack open a villain and really get down to something that's very real and very social about what they're experiencing, and the twilight of My Hero Academia has done an exceptional job at it, where others have not. And it's very funny that I have cracked so many jokes about it, but when that series is finished, it's going to go out as something very exceptional, something that really did its themes right and had them, even if it was very late in the game. It's also going to be devastating the fact that Horikoshi didn't get to play with those throughout the whole thing. but yeah, we'll get back to this week's chapter, but I had to give My Hero some more of its flowers as it's really wrapping up, and it's gonna need me to champion it at the end of the day, because my god, the reception to this week's chapter has been a huge turnaround. Like,
hate it or they like it?
People are hating on it, and I'm like, you know what, fuck it, let's talk about it right now. People are hating on this week's chapter.
Okay, you
420.
Have to summarize it a little bit for me, because I, like I said, I'm three chapters behind.
I'm going to summarize it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So this, we get a flashback. We cut into what was Aizawa and Mike doing with Kuragiri when they got pulled away from that final battle. We find that he pulls them away to the sea rock offshore, pulls them away, and then Kuragiri is currently dying, it seems, or getting corrupted. Like, he seems to be fading away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Aizawa and Mike are trying to resurrect, trying to get him to just one more go. One more last ditch. Can you help us, please? Mike starts to give up. Aizawa does not. And he goes, hey, we're teachers. We are fucking adults.
Mm-hmm.
And we have children to protect. Kuragiri, you want to protect Shigaraki. We want to protect Deku and the rest of the kids. We have a mutual goal here, and that goes beyond good and evil. We both, at the end of the day, there are children we want to protect. That should be enough. One last go.
Mm-hmm.
He opens up. Aizawa starts pulling an Avengers Endgame, because Horikoshi is Western hero pilled. He loves those references.
Mm-hmm.
So Aizawa's now going around and recruiting any last second hero, any heroes, even ones who were just holding up. It doesn't matter. Do you want to help? We've got one more push. We can do this. And so he starts recruiting people. Hilariously, we have one guy. I don't know his name, but you'll see this if you guys are reading this week, guys. There's a little guy with a staff, and he's like, I'm not very famous, but I'm a hero. I'll fight by your side. That's a protagonist from one of Horikoshi's earliest works.
Aww.
And I'm so happy he's there. Be like Horikoshi. Live long enough that your last ditch effort to get famous on Jump works and you put all your old pro tags in just Cute. For the fun of it. That was a great moment. So yeah, so Horikoshi, Aizawa starts recruiting people. We get a brief look at the fight that Sero and Sugar Man were involved in. A guy named Gashly, the baby tree, who seems to create just like little homunculuses and just like swarms, an army of homunculi that we've been watching. And then we just like skip over the fight. Like, we don't even know how this fight ends. Aizawa just goes, yeah, fuck your fight. We're out. We're pulling you out. You go enjoy. He looks like he's fighting in the Koshien or some shit. At Tokoba National Stadium, if that's real or a Star Wars reference, I don't know. but they just kind of ditch the villain and say, yeah, fuck you. We got work to do. So yeah, Gashly will be a villain in My Hero Shippuden, is what I'm saying. Because they just completely skip over him. So now we get to the controversial moment. Aizawa shows up and he stabs Deku with a piece of Eri's horn. Eri pulls an Aizawa. She's inspired by him. She cuts off her horn, says, stab Deku with this. It might do something, we don't know, but we obviously know what it's going to do. There's a very brief mention of Horikoshi saying, hey, this might mess up your quirk. It might not be functional after this, which says, hey, here's how we're going to fix Deku and then cut off any more consequence enders. So Thread Shot might be permanent, actually. I doubt it. I feel like she will eventually grow up to have more control of her power. But we're saying that in the immediate, there's not going to be a flip switch of her fixing everything.
Did not collect the Dragon Balls.
We did not immediately collect. We'll get the Dragon Balls in Shippuden, but we're not going to have it in the immediate now. But he fixes Deku, because in last chapter, Deku lost his arms.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, he did.
Because I feel like I heard you talk.
That was plastered all over Twitter. It was not sticky. It ruined it. The spoilers ruined it for me. I was so angry. and I feel like this is the spoilers now biting the community back. Because I don't know how reading this, you guys would hate this. I feel like you got some things out of context from the spoilers and that ruined your time. This is why I tell you guys, stop reading the spoilers. Wait till at least the scanlations come out where you can at least read it as intended. Because, my God, this chapter is awesome. We're getting everything together. And then through the portals, we get Kaminari, Shoji, Anima, Momo, and Mineta.
My life.
Sero and Tailman are there too. If this is our final group here, this is an interesting delicious. Group. A delicious, interesting final group to fight with.
I'm just glad my wife is here.
I cannot stress this enough. Horikoshi watches the abridged parody. Because look who he put on there. He said, oh, you're doing something with Momo? Here she is. You like Mineta? I love Mineta. Joyride loves Mineta too? Here's Mineta. Oh, I also think Kaminari is one of the strongest heroes, even when he's in dumb mode. Put him there. Oh, you guys like to make Shoji like a little backwards guy, background guy, and then you thrust him into the spotlight? Oh, let's do it here too. I genuinely...
Who's that up there?
That's just some random guy. But like, I have a feeling that there's more heroes. I mean, obviously there's more general heroes than this. But if these are the only Class 1A students we see in this final fight,
hell yeah.
The man absolutely watches the parody and is putting every piece I want on the fucking board. Exactly to a T. Insane. But another thing we need to mention, that again, now one of my theories, the one I've been playing with in the parody, Deku mentions, All for One is dead. I don't know who this fucker is who's overtaken Shiggy. This plays in my theory that somewhere within the quirk singularity, there is a cosmic horror entity. I always go back. I started this theory back when Horikoshi had his exhibition, the art exhibition, and he said that every art piece that he had was relevant to the final arc. And it's been true. But Ayama specifically, we have an image of Ayama at the side of an alley with a looming fucking Eldritch horror freaking monster looming over him. And people are like, oh, that must metaphorically be All for One and his control over Ayama. And I'm like, true, definitely can be interpreted that way and definitely works as of now. But I genuinely believe there is something beyond All for One that is alive, but not alive. And that is what's in Shigaraki right now. It is pure abject despair and nihilism. that is operating within him right now. It is now manifested into a physical form inside the corpse of Shigaraki. Although, even Shigaraki is not fully gone. There's no fucking way. That's my own one and only complaint about what has happened so far is if he is course correcting, then that's not actually All for One, but some echo of him that also has other personalities, I can accept that. It's what I'm trying to do. And I'm definitely hard coping on it. It's definitely still just All for One. But if this scandalation, if that shows up in the official, that's not All for One, that's something else. Ooh, we're cooking with something. But my complaint is the fact that, my gosh, no one's ever got All for One has returned for a third, fourth freaking time. Why can't Shigaraki?
I'm sick of this guy. Get him out of here.
So, yeah.
And they're on
Blackmail Street, I understand right? that complaint. But people complaining about how immediately Deku gets his arms back. Guys, what series have we been reading for the past 9-10 years now?
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, don't say that out loud.
I think it's 10 years as of
Yucky.
This summer.
Oh, that's... Oh. I don't like that.
But yeah, guys...
It makes me feel fucking old.
Guys, chill. What do you mean? The stuff that you railed against me for complaining about, now you're complaining about. Relax. This is nothing out of expectation right now. My goodness. But I think this chapter was incredible. I
would
love...
you say that this chapter was dank? Chapter 420?
Oh, 420, wow.
Was it though, for real though?
No, nothing dank.
No, nothing dank.
The audience doesn't think it's dank, but yeah.
Boo!
I genuinely don't understand the hate for this chapter. I thought it was incredible. But anyways, let's kind of return to the task at hand. So To a Nice ended, and I think that was a short-sighted move. I feel
devastated.
Like, because we both genuinely agree that it doesn't have to objectively be literal shoujo, but we're seeing the influence over other genres and mediums right now.
And a lot more shoujo is getting licensed
in
the West.
Yes, licensed, and a lot of more anime produced. And I brought this up to Val, because I basically said, we're running out of things because there's a bubble that's trying to burst right now. And it's more, but there isn't more because the Golden Goose, Shonen Jump, the one that's supposed to produce the things that is the easy sells, as I would call them. If you want a baseline anime to work, you get it from Jump. You get it from Shueisha. Okay. The problem is that how cutthroat they have been. There's hardly anything has gotten its roots in. You gotta get at least like 50 chapters in before you can produce an anime.
I was gonna say, meanwhile, most shoujo that I read is like longer than that with no anime in sight.
And that's what happened is they're running
and
out of things.
And now they're doing Nina the Starry Bride in the fall.
So all these anime production companies and these producers and these licensors are like, okay, we need more anime. There's more, every season there is more anime than ever. But they're running out of things to produce.
They're running out of shonen.
Yeah, exactly. They're running out of the Golden Goose what they're running out of. So where do we get our material from now? You're starting to see this pop of shoujo and shoujo-inspired work. And that's going to create a new meta. That's going to create a new market. I guarantee it.
I'm so excited.
And Shonen Jump is going to fall behind. And what are they gonna have? They've got Blue Box. They're not dumb. Shonen Jump is not dumb. They're just a little short-sighted sometimes. Cause clearly, Blue Box and Witch Watch, they've got those. Those are ready anytime. I know they're developing an anime for Blue Box.
I'll say that's been assigned to a studio already, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, I'm pretty sure.
No one's
too.
Happy about the studio it was given to, I hear, but you know, it's there. It's already getting licensed.
Again, you got to see the first episode first because speaking of which, Kaiju number 8.
So here's my thing.
People are beefing about.
I don't have any studio snobbery because I'm more of a manga person. I don't always have time to sit down and give my full attention to like an anime. And
ever since Oshinoko,
by the time the dub comes out, everyone's spoiled it for me.
Yeah, ever since Oshinoko, I know to shut my mouth until the episode's out because I've learned to never judge a studio after Oshinoko.
Oh my god, yeah.
Because how do you go from the most jobber-ass, whatever the fuck that studio was doing, to Oshinoko? That was a ridiculous glow up.
Masterpiece. Oh god.
I won't give any studio shit until the episode's actually out. So that being said, so Kaiju number 8, an example of this. I didn't catch it all. It did pop up on... So apparently, at the time of we're recording this, we're recording this on a Saturday. So I caught half of it on Twitter this morning, and apparently it shows up an hour later on Crunchyroll. So I don't know what the hell X was paying for that exclusivity, because it's barely anything.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if you want to talk about don't judge a book by its visual art, its character key art that's released, Kaiju number 8, at least the first episode, looks great. It looks very well done. Not surprised. It's Production IG, dumbasses. The same people who do Haikyuu and like all the other like really good low-key but still very fun sports anime they do. At least from my experience, they do a lot of things. But why were we worried about Production IG? Because the key art looked bad? I've discussed this before when we talk about best character designs at the Crunchyroll Anime Awards, and I talk about adaptive design. Yeah, I don't like the design of those characters either, but there's no better argument for adaptive design than Kaiju number 8, because yes, they look very different from the manga, but my god, watch it in motion in that anime, and you see why it was the right decision. But yeah, Kaiju number 8, the anime, so far, so good. Guys, you gotta be quiet. Speaking of being quiet, Astro no Kugai, from the creator of Tokyo Revengers, will be coming out tomorrow. And everyone on Twitter is like, this looks just like Kagurabachi. This is gonna be trash. Two on Ice, something else. They were mad about something else getting canceled ahead of it.
Mama Yuyu.
Mama Yuyu, yes. They're mad about Mama Yuyu. Tell me you didn't read Mama Yuyu. Tell me you didn't read Mama Yuyu by complaining about Mama Yuyu getting canceled. To the 10 of you who were legitimate fans, good on you, great for you. That shit was slow. The concept was just, it never got its footholds in.
But you know what's an excellent Exorcist manga?
We're getting it. We're getting to my segue because I mentioned the vow that I'm tired of battle exorcisms. I'm almost just tired of exorcism as a whole. This is why I really have been keeping up with one of our favorites, Yomi no Sugai. I'm really just tired of the whole exorcism shit. And Val mentions, yeah, but that is so heavily ingrained in Japanese culture. They will never get tired of that. You're just gonna get used to it. But I go, yeah, but we're seeing an exceptional amount of it right now. And specifically, I want to see a refreshing... If we are stuck with it, I want to see a refreshing take upon it. I want to see something new. I'm tired of just fighting yokai shit. And so you recommended to me, and I briefly brought up on the podcast, and now you get to talk about it here, QQ Sweeper and Queen's Quality.
Yes, so QQ Sweeper is technically like... They call it a prequel series, but basically what happened was they ran QQ Sweeper for 15 chapters, it got wrapped up, and then they were like, hey, people fucking loved that, you want to bring it back? So they made Queen's Quality.
So QQ was a pilot. It was a mini-series pilot that basically got adapted into a new series.
Yes.
And I just read three chapters this morning.
So like, that's the beginning of the Queen's Quality story. It's really weird. Yeah, it's a disjointed pilot. Continuation.
Yeah, it's a pilot is what it is. It's introducing the concept. That was refined into Queen's Quality.
Oh, yes.
And so I read QQ Sweeper this morning. And yeah, that is a pilot in all caps. Because after the second chapter, the very first panel of the second chapter is the author directly talking to the audience and going, I made my protagonist's boobs too big. I'm going to shrink them. And I'm like, respect. Like, that's a queen-ass move right there. So yeah, this thing is a pilot. This thing directly talks to the audience and goes, yeah, I like this, but I'm going to fix this. This thing changes itself in real time. It is absolutely a pilot. And it's fun to watch it change in real time, then end, and then come back as a whole new series, but you took your best elements and your best subject. That's really cool. So what I would describe QQ Sweeper as is it is an exorcism manga. It is a shoujo with shonen elements. It's the reverse of what we just spoke about. It has those domestic premises that are earned in this right. It's like Jujutsu Kaisen, but instead of domains, it's houses. And instead of like yokai, but instead of fighting the yokai, we clean the house. We're fighting through cleaning. They're called sweepers. It's really endearing. I really like, I'm talking about a refreshing take about on fighting demons and fighting yokai and exorcism and stuff. This is what I deem a fresh take upon this.
Well, and that's the beauty too, is like in Japanese culture, cleaning yes. is the way you like purify shit.
Yes.
So it makes perfect sense.
How has this
sense.
Not been done before?
It's so good. So like I, without major spoilers, there's a part. So everyone has a like weapon when they go into like the mind world where they're doing the cleaning.
It's just for our JJK fans. These are the domains.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, when they go in, everyone has a weapon.
This came out before JJK, didn't it?
I think so.
So JJK, I'm going to say this right now. JJK ripped this off. This
yeah.
It's a whole ripoff. JJK should just end now and let To a Nice Comeback. I think Newest Exorcist deserves its spot, JJK spot more.
Oh, fair.
No, it's not. No. I'm joking. I fucking hate Newest Exorcist. Newest Exorcist should have been axed several times before even Mama Yu Yu and Two on Ice.
But
come
anyway,
the hell
anyway.
On.
So when they're picking weapons, right? So Q has his like broom in the real world that kind of turns into an axe in the
yeah.
the Mind Palace or whatever, and Fumi has her like little choosing ceremony, like they reach into a mirror and pick the weapon, and she's like, oh, I can't wait to see what I get, and she pulls it out and it's like a long-handled scrub brush, like that you would use to clean a toilet. There's no in-world weapon form. She just beats the shit out of demons with what is the equivalent of a toilet brush.
It's very funny. It's a shoujo, and again, we talk about how they're treated like genres. You don't see this much, at least the shoujo that I've read and been exposed to, you don't see this level of comedy. And again, I was very impressed with the level of meta. Again, the author will just talk to the audience and go, yeah, I'm going to change this. It's my kind of move. Again, it's specifically the shit I like to do where it's like, there's no border between you. I'm literally, the author's literally sitting right next to the reader, like peering mm-hmm. over their shoulder and going, oh yeah, I don't like that either. Let's change that in real time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. It's very funny.
That's how Tokyo Mew Mew was back in the day. Like you would get
yeah.
the diary of the author in the margins basically. And it is just very endearing. But as far as the story itself, just like, it's really charming because what I love about QQ Sweeper and Queen's Quality is that you're essentially getting, I would almost call it edutainment, but not in like a condescending or derogatory way, where it's teaching emotional intelligence to adults or young girls, I guess, technically by demographic. But like
it should be teens in general, honestly. But again, the teen, men, women, everything between, but fucking love this series. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, the lessons that it teaches are very much like, it teaches you mindfulness. Like, there are parts where Kyutaro is like talking to Fumi and she's like having a panic attack and he's like, listen, like, you need to stop, take a deep breath, and we're gonna focus on one thing. Just one thing right now. And that's gonna get you through this dungeon, you know? And so, like, the other part of this is, I don't know if you've encountered this yet. Give me a brief summary of what you've seen so far.
I read three chapters, so I got,
that's
I
cool.
got,
what happened?
I got the bones of the premise. I've got that this chick, again, I like her, she's very Nami pill.
I love Fumi so much.
So she's introduced as, like, a gold digger, essentially, is how she first shows up. But then you learn that she's homeless, and that her gardens have abandoned her and stuff. And like these are things that are revealed in slowly in real time. It's not a huge spoiler. It happens in the first chapter.
Yeah.
Or the second, I think. But it's just like she's as this Goldberg. She's a, as me and Steven were referring last night, we love trash waifus. We
girl
love
failures.
We this is a household that loves girl failures, and this is one. Like as you just described, her weapon is a toilet brush.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that. But yeah. She's a gold digger. She's looking for a boyfriend who's rich. Is what she's looking
her
for.
Prince Charming, she calls it.
Yeah, but
it.
She as she goes, my Prince Charming. But in her head, she's like, I just need a guy with money.
I need a guy with money who will pamper me and, yeah, take
yeah.
care of me.
And just take care of my homelessness.
Yeah.
And then she runs, Sims run, rolling with the wrong crowd. And these guys trash. So she's introduced sleeping in this abandoned house on the premises of a school. And the school's like, why would you sleep in there? That place is haunted. And, yeah. and like, we're not even, because like, oh my God, am I in trouble? He goes, We're not even mad. We're just impressed that you're such a
that
piece.
That you survived.
That you're a little trash raccoon girl that sleeps in haunted mansions that no one would. Like, honestly, someone has to live in it. So, fine. Just don't do it again. But then those kids, the kids she's rolling with, go into the house, trash it, and that pisses her off.
Mm.
And it especially pisses off our Sasuke-pilled, wears all black. Again, the author jokes
Q-Taro,
about this.
I love
Q-Taro.
Him. Q-Taro. He's
the,
perfect.
The artist laughs about it. She goes, yeah, because this guy wears all ink black hair, dark eyes, black uniform, wears a black scarf over his head. The only way you can see is his eyes. And she jokes about this. The author, she goes, yeah, I kept adding black and I kept laughing. And so I kept adding black until I couldn't laugh anymore, until my sides hurt. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's a great way to do a character design. He's like, he's hysterically just ink black for no reason other than it made me laugh. There was no design philosophy here. It doesn't make sense for his character other than it amused me.
I was gonna say, he's like, because he's a super sweet guy.
He is.
Who just can't talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, he's paralyzed with fear at the thought of talking to people.
He's just antisocial, but he's the Gojo of this universe, all right? This man, whereas Gojo covers his eyes, this man covers his mouth.
Yeah.
He looks like that. He looks like, again, gay Akumi, ripped off QQ Sweeper. This is confirmed. Please spread it on social media. Specifically tag Mr. Host on Twitter.
Yeah.
And in the Discord server. He wants to be told this. He needs this reality. It's for his own good. It's healthy for him. So he comes in and he is like, you guy, you dumb motherfuckers, what have you done? And all these gross ass bug yokai start coming out of the walls and attacking everyone. And so he cleans and so he fights them by cleaning the house. And he cleans the whole place and clears everything. And it's like, oh, wow, that's an interesting concept. But then it goes further, because at the end of the chapter, they part ways with the great girl. They barely speak to each other. She goes further into the house and then walks into what's literally a domain. Like, there's like dimensions in these houses. Like, when these houses are haunted, when they're required of cleaning and exorcism, you can enter a door and wind up in the freaking spirit realm. So she goes deeper in, and then the next chapter, he goes in and rescues her from there. More cleaning required, then we get pulled out, and then we have QQ Sweeper also ripped off Twilight, because now now she gets brought to this household, and the entire, this dude's from a whole family lineage, because we love eugenics in Japan, of famous sweepers. And he's
the different gates. I forgot about that. Yeah. They expand on that.
They expand on the lore of the different families and stuff. Again, JJK ripped off QQ Sweeper. He goes, I highly recommend that we hypnotize you. I'm a psychiatrist by day. I highly recommend that we hypnotize you to forget about this and move on with your life.
I'll say, he's also the principal of the school, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, but he's also like, I know you're homeless and that sucks. And she's like, yeah, that really sucks.
Can I live here?
Can I just live with you guys?
I'll clean everything.
Again, we talk about how the premise is thrust upon you. This woman thrusts herself onto the premise. That's what I like about this. Where she's like, no, fuck that. I don't want to forget about this.
She was that wasn't that scary.
She's like, honestly, I've lived in the streets. Like, in Japan, in clean, sanitized Japan, I've lived in the homeless streets. Like, y'all don't even know what I've seen.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would rather live with you guys. And then the dad principal is like, yeah, fuck it. You gotta be my son's assistant. Like, he's working himself to death.
He's working himself to death, and he has no other human contact.
He I'm afraid he's gonna become an incel. Can you please just?
You don't even have to sleep with him. Just like teach him that talking to women won't kill him.
This rips off. What's that? What's that Jennifer Lawrence movie?
What's it called?
It's on Netflix
now.
No
Hard Feelings?
Yeah, No Hard Feelings.
Yeah.
You guys should watch No Hard Feelings, by the way.
Oh, that movie rocks.
We talk about how rom-coms are coming back. Everyone's talking about Anything But You, but
which
No Hard...
sucked ass.
Yeah, which sucked ass. But No Hard Feelings is what should receive the success of Anyone But You.
Yeah.
Really funny. But again, based on this premise of, hey, can you just hang out with our son so he doesn't become a total piece of shit? It's awesome. And so, okay. And so she becomes his assistant, and they go exercise houses and clean houses and fight gross creatures. And I like it. I've said exorcism a million times, and I'm not gagging. Like, it's great. This is fun. I really enjoyed it. And as you said, that on that shoujo level, it looks like a shoujo. It's more shoujo pill than anything. But it has the bones of a shonen, and it talks about, it speaks on emotional intelligence and stuff like that. It has a lot going on for it. And it's very fun. It's very irreverent to itself. It's not taking itself very seriously. Because the author will just stop the story at any given moment and go, yeah, I gotta change. I was going here, but here, I'm just gonna explain to you why I'm gonna abruptly change this.
I was gonna say, too, that gets, like you said, like, the pilot element of it. I bet that definitely gets reduced in Queen's Quality.
Yeah, because this is a pilot. Queen's Quality, they probably refine it, and yeah, and it
they
moves
do,
on.
They do,
yeah.
But, like, the other really beautiful thing about this series, which you probably haven't encountered yet at the point you're at, but, like, it just beautifully blends in the slice of life elements.
Love me some slice of life.
Seamlessly. Like, it's so...
Plot is for cowards. Let nice people just live their lives.
Like, it goes between being this battle exorcism manga that has, like, a delicious blend of comedy, but then it goes into the slice of life, and you have, like, an opportunity to really love these characters to their core.
Well, the fact that you have a pilot, it means you already love these characters before they dip into slice of life. Like, so you're already invested in them. Yeah, why not hang with them at that point? Yeah, I fully agree with that.
Ugh, it's such a sweet dynamic between the leads, too, because, okay. No, I don't want to spoil too much. I was going to say, there's something between them that the pilot doesn't go into as much detail on. But, like, obviously, you know, it's a shoujo. It's very likely there will be some elements of romance. It's not, like, the primary focus of the series, but it's there. And the relationship between the two of them is so just beautifully accomplished. And so, it's not, like... It's kind of a slow burn, but it feels, like, authentic. It's not the kind of relationship building you see in, say, shonen domestic propaganda, where the girl shows up and she's immediately into him and he's like, oh gosh, I'm so inept, I can't, girl. Like, there's a genuine buildup of their relationship that is just so satisfying. And also, at the same time, like, you don't get so much at once that you're overwhelmed and grossed out.
Yeah, I honestly, like, right now, the our Joyride highest recommendation right now is QQ Sweeper and Queen's Quality. It's old, but not that old. It's 2015. It's actually younger than My Hero Academia.
And Queen's Quality is still running. It's entering its final arc right now, manga-wise.
They
so
are all the good stuff's entering its final arc.
Great for binging.
Right now. Yeah, but, I'm trying to think, was anything else I want to say? Oh, yeah, I briefly mentioned the fact about, people complain about Astro, Nogai from, Tokyo Revengers mangaka. Mm. What I wanted to mention about that was the fact that everyone complaining about that manga right now is doing exactly the same thing that happened to Kagurabachi. You are playing right into Shonen Jump's trap. You are going to memeify this thing because you're going to hate on it so much. And the fact that this is from a very well-respected mangaka, it's going to be good. Regardless of how you think about the style or what it looks like or what the synopsis might be, this thing's going to show up. You're going to be shitting on it. And the fact that you have got hate watchers are going to highly be exposed to this. So the first chapter is going to do very well because it's going to be people who are genuinely interested as well as people who want to hate watch. This is how shit like Velma happens, motherfuckers, and everything else gets canceled. But unlike that, like Kagurabachi, where you get these hate watchers, but then the thing ends up being good. Now you got an audience you never had before enjoying it. They're going to come back. You're going to create another overnight memeified phenomenon. Case in point, like, we'll be back in 2 weeks right now when I'm proven right about this. But I just want to say about that. Otherwise, I know next to nothing about the other two that are coming out. All I know is that Nui's Exorcist should not be breathing. I just like Duran, I continue to wish death upon Nui's Exorcist. I think the mangaka is very talented art-wise. I feel like story-wise, they can write some great dialogue. They just need to put it on a better premise and not be about exorcism. But
please, for the love of God.
But the fact that we still have two more series coming and My Academia is going on break again next week, I don't know what's falling on the dagger next. I'm assuming Shadow Eliminators, because I read the pilot and no one has said a thing about it. No one has talked about it. Shadow Eliminators, critically ignored. Nothing. We've heard nothing good or bad, which is bad. The fact that you hear nothing about something, that thing's out the door next. Like, how many of these series will fall on daggers until Nui's Exorcist is finally out the door? Because this is getting ridiculous. How many chapters does Nui's Exorcist have now?
I have no idea.
Let's look this
I
up before we
it.
Go. But yeah, but this is my new Duran Duran, where it's like, I don't wish failure upon any mangaka. This
except
is a very...
this one.
No, 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 again, not the mangaka, just the series. We are 45 chapters in. Guys, we are 5 chapters away from this thing having enough material for an anime. We gotta kill this thing now. Stop reading it.
Kill it with fire.
We gotta kill it with fire. We are 5 chapters, we are about 5 to 6 chapters away from this thing getting an anime adaptation. We have to stop now. This is dangerous. This is gonna be a force phenomenon, even worse than how you guys feel about Kagurabachi, which is good, by the way. And when my Hero Academia is done, I think I'm gonna become a weekly reader on Bachi. I think that's gonna be my goal.
I'm gonna say, I have so many things I'm reading weekly, right? Although, with 2 on ice ending, my personal lineup now has a slot in it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about this before the show. We were talking about how Shoujo is primed to take over. Jump Plus is also primed to take over. I generally think Kaiju No. 8 is late to the game, considering its success was very COVID influenced. The fact that everyone was exposed. It was right place, right time. And whereas if you look up anything about Kaiju No. 8 other than the anticipation of its anime, people will talk about how like no one reads the manga anymore, which is not true. The numbers don't lie. Not only does Kaiju No. 8 do modestly well on Manga Plus, its spinoff series does even better. There's a supporting character that has his own spinoff who's a lot more popular than the main series, which is quite interesting. I've never read it. I'm going to have to look into it and research it. But
all I want from Jump Plus at this point in time is fucking marriage toxic anime.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. It's just like the energy around Kaiju No. 8 just does not feel right. But the fact that Crunchyroll has notoriously been bad at marketing. They are pushing the hell out of Kaiju No. 8. Twitter bought the rights to air it first for like 30 minutes. Weird. But people are fighting over this, and I don't know why, other than, again, Jump is the golden goose, and Jump is running out of things to produce right now. So I think this is our last boat out before we had to start focusing and getting new ideas to produce things. But otherwise, I'm just saying, and you are saying, Marriage Toxin, sitting right there. It's got over 50, it's got 70 chapters.
Has the most lovable characters in the game right now.
One of the most fun week-to-week reads. Will definitely be a fun week-to-week watch. It's so well-structured. The pacing is wonderful. The characters are awesome. The action, if it's brought to a good studio, will be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel like it's better than Spy X Family.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think it refreshes that domestic propaganda that I don't like.
But that's the thing. It's about more, dating, and he's earning it. Like, yeah, he's learning and growing.
He's earning
every
the premise.
Woman he dates.
He's earning the premise. Yes. The premise is him earning it. It's great. Yeah, it's poised. Like, if you want to produce an anime, if you're an anime production right now and you want an overnight winner, Marriage Toxin is it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're so late to the game on Kaiju No. 8, and Marriage Toxin was sitting right there, is ready for it. And you know what? If they're running out of things to produce, it's probably an inevitability. But that said, we've been doing some quickies. We are busy this spring, folks. We are so busy. We have a traffic jam in pre-production right now. There are so many things we want to produce right now, and it's like, all right, who's going to squeeze into that lane and come out right now? And right now, Kaiju No. 8 did, but who comes next? It's anyone's guest for Bridge Parodies and other projects we're working on behind the scenes. But yeah, that's what we need to get back to. That's why things are quick. Otherwise, I know there's definitely going to be a break at the end of the month. There might... We confirmed that we're ending at episode 100. It might be a while before we get episode 100 because we might have to go on a brief hiatus before episode 100 because of some production issues between both me and Val. Both of our attentions are about to get pulled this spring, early summer, and we don't know when we're coming back. So anyone's like, oh no, Joycast is ending. It's probably gonna be ending like at the end of this year, because it's gonna be a while before we get through all these final episodes. So yeah, hang tight, folks. We should be back next week at the very least, but after that, I don't know what's gonna happen. It's gonna be a berserk boat arc for us for a while. That's what's gonna happen. Hopefully not too long though. But until next week, until then, take care.
Bye.
Mind the gap as you exit our podcast safely. Rebuild of Joycast is hosted by Ivan Leroy and Valentine Stokes. Leroy's written and directed works can be found on the Joyride Entertainment YouTube channel. Val's dulcet tones can be heard in many of your favorite anime and web series, such as Ruby, Lackadaisy, Gunbuster, Death Battle, and more. Audio engineering by Stina Carey. Music provided by Lo-Fi Geek. Intro and outro narration by Stina Carey. Outro music composed by Michael Payovich. Logo and visuals designed by Ivan Leroy. Keep the conversation going by visiting Joyride's public Discord server, where you can discuss this week's topics and more. Patreon donors also get access to our weekly anime watch club with cast and crew. Links provided in the description. Rebuild of Joycast is produced by Joyride Entertainment and Rock Voice Productions, LLC, and made possible thanks to Patreon donations from generous listeners like you. Thank you for keeping Joyride's engine burning.